Let's call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is currently 1:37 p.m., Tuesday, March 22nd. Present today, we have Vice Chair Schauer, Senator McChicky, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Myers, which gives us a quorum to conduct business. Staff in the committee today is Nancy Hemingway, per usual, from Senate Records. Thank you, Nancy. Doug is joining us today as our moderator, and as always, Michaela Anderson is my committee aide. Quick reminder, of course, please silence your cell phones if you haven't already. Today, we're going to be revisiting Senate Bill 170, the Marine Highway Corporation, and discussing funding topics. We'll try to keep our discussion somewhat focused on that today. With that, I'd like to welcome my aide, Teresa Wolstad, to the table to start us off. We've also got a presentation from DOT here in a little while as well.
For the record, my name is Teresa Wolstad, staff to Senator Myers. Once again, we're going to be presenting SB 170, an act relating to the Alaska Marine Highway Corporation Act. And today, our discussion will be focusing on bonds, corporation finance, and provisions. So a little bit about the financial provisions of the proposed corporation. The board of directors will be responsible for management of the financial and legal obligations of the proposed Marine Highway Corporation. The board shall appoint a chief executive officer and a chief financial officer that the corporation will be able to have, but will serve at the pleasure of the board. The board shall, by regulation, delegate the powers and duties necessary for the management and operation of the corporation to the chief executive officer. However, specific board approval is going to be required for adoption of annual budgets, long-range capital improvement program plans, to enter into any collective bargaining agreements, to be able to mortgage or pledge corporate assets, to conveyance of entire interest of corporate assets, and to begin a capital project with an estimated completion time more than 1 year or a cost of over $500,000. Now, there are going to be three individual funds that are part of the proposed SB 170 corporation. And these are considered used by the corporation itself. Is first off, the Alaska Marine Highway Operational Fund, the Revenue Accounting Fund, and the Vessel Maintenance and Replacement Account. Now, the Alaska Marine Highway System Operational Fund will consist of money appropriated by the legislature, and the corporation may use the money for the operations without further appropriation, and the money can be appropriated to the fund once it's appropriated, does not lapse. The corporation may request a direct appropriation or grant from the legislature. Now, it's important to note that the Alaska State Public Corporation's expenditure of income that must be specifically appropriated to a corporation as not to violate the prohibition against dedicated funds in Article 9, Section 7 of the Constitution of the State of Alaska. Now, the Revenue Accounting Fund is established as a separate fund in the corporation. And that's composed of gross revenue generated from the operations of the proposed corporation. Now, the legislature may appropriate the gross revenue deposited into the fund to the Alaska Marine Highway System Operating Fund, and that's under Chapter 5 of the Fiscal Procedures of the Act. So the corporation receipts earned or managed by the State of Alaska Public Corporation shall be accounted for separately, and the appropriations from those program receipts are not made available as an unrestricted general fund. Now, the vessel maintenance and replacement account is created as a separate account in the Marine Highway Operational Fund. It will consist of money appropriated to the proposed corporation by the legislature for maintenance and replacement of the vessels and money transferred to the account by the corporation. The corporation may use the money in the account for maintenance and replacement of the vessels without further appropriation. So now going on to bonds, the proposed corporation will be authorized to issue bonds by resolution of the board, and the board shall be able to determine the amounts of the bonds to be proposed by the corporation may issue, and the bonds issued by the corporation will not bear the full faith and credit of the state and its political subdivisions or will not be liable for debts of the corporation itself. The bonds issued by the corporation are payable from the revenues or assets of the corporation. In addition, the proposed corporation may secure its bonds by obtaining revenue pledges from federal, municipality, corporate, association, institutional, or even individual people. The proposed Marine Highway Corporation would be able to issue debt in a more flexible manner and if limited oversight as compared to other public corporations with the state of Alaska. And then looking at dividends to the state, the proposed corporation for SB 170 shall pay as a dividend to the general fund any amount which the Alaska Marine Highway Operational Fund exceeds the projected cost of the operation corporation through the next fiscal year. Thus, any excess revenue after operations, maintenance, debt service will flow to the state of Alaska from the proposed corporation. So that was a little quick review over the fiscal authority that we're giving to the proposed corporation for the Marine Highway System.
Thank you, Ms. Wolstead. So what I'd like to do at this time is we've got a presentation from DOT, and which is going to dovetail with some of what Ms. Wolstead was just discussing, and then we'll take some questions and get a little bit more general after this presentation's over.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rob Carpenter, DOT Deputy Commissioner. Thanks for having me, members of the committee. How do I drive this thing? There we go. Okay, so not knowing a lot of what we need to present today, we put some slides together just on the topics you kind of provided: bonding, maintenance, replacement of vessels, the budget, our property and assets, and the STIP, I believe, are the main topics you wanted to cover. We don't have a slide for every single topic, but we are open to all discussion on anything in that list at any time. I have Matt McLaren, our finance guy from Marine Highway, and Captain John Falvey, our general manager, on the line for any of the really tough questions that I certainly can't answer. And if you don't mind, I'll proceed.
Please do.
Thank you. So I just wanted to, this is the governor's proposed budget for this coming fiscal year, and that was on the list, and I assume that's what you wanted to talk about in brief. It's $141 million, roughly, of which $135 million is of federal receipts from the $200 million program that was recently passed in the infrastructure bill by Congress. That's $200 million a year for the next 5 years. And the plan we've put forward, we call it all ships all the time. What that intent there is there's no scheduled budgetary layups. It is all our ships running as much as they can, other than when they are in their scheduled overhauls and maintenance. So the intent, basically, the $141 million would provide the money necessary for that. And as you can see, there's a $5 million portion of which would be from our Marine Highway revenues to cover anything that any costs that are not federally eligible. So that'd be like alcohol, things like that, which we can't use federal funds.
Senator Schauer.
So I don't understand how the federal funding works, but just out of curiosity, was there discussion in how you would use all of that? I mean, maybe it's good for us, maybe it's bad, because again, I don't understand what the requirements are, at least what was coming yet. I haven't seen it. So, you know, we have other things we need to do. We were talking about potential changes to the ferry system, maybe smaller boats, other kinds of things. They may not be applicable cost that you can use the program for, but with all the things we've talked about, including maintenance and other stuff with the boats, what are we not taking advantage of by leaving 50 plus million on the table? And maybe we shouldn't, and that's fine too. I just wonder if we could get a little more fidelity on that $200 million chunk, because it's pretty unusual for us to use and go, oh, look, we'll leave $55 million on the table. And that may be the best answer. Can you describe that?
Great question. Through the chairman, Senator Schauer, I was trying to be kind of broad there, but you're right. So that we have $200 million annually for this program for rural ferry systems across the nation. The rules to qualify is they have to have two ports separated by 50 miles, and they have to have a population less than 50,000 in those ports. Turns out that from what we can tell, there's not another ferry system in the country that qualifies. We've heard some things like Puerto Rico and stuff, but I think reading the bill, it specifically says states. So we're hopeful we'll get the majority of that $200 million annually for the next 5 years. This proposal was, again, prepared back in when we hardly knew anything about this bill. And it was, let's fund the operating budget and we'll proceed forward with planning on the rest of the money. You're right, there's $60 million roughly on the table here that when we have more clarity of timing of cash flows and everything, we can plan for the capital investment or other actions. Another step in this planning process is the governor's put forward the bill. I think it's SB, I'm drawing a blank, 195 or something, that basically separates the Marine Highway Fund from the general fund, and the idea is to collect some revenue. By using this federal money, we can collect revenues of the system for future planning and use purposes. And then furthermore, we have the new Marine Highway System Board, which is diving headfirst into, you know, capital modernizing the fleet and how we go about doing that. And certainly going to be looking at this $200 million and the funding sources of how we can, you know, plan it out best as far as cash flows.
Senator Sharp.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up. So this, in essence, is replacing what we would spend for the next 5 years out of the state to run the ferry system. And what was our UGF spend before?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Schauer. Yes, this would replace. I have another slide that breaks out our historical funding and how it's composed. I can show you. Yeah.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deputy Commissioner, we pretty clear we don't have the crew to run all the ships all the time. Do we have a sense that by calendar year 23 we'll be able to run 9 vessels 44 weeks a year each? When do we get there?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Keel, I mean, great question. We are struggling right now. This summer, I think, you know, we're hopeful to run the Columbia, but it's not looking good at the moment. So your point is well taken. We have the money now. We deal with difficult ships that are old, but now we're struggling with crew. So we have an intensive recruiting campaign, and we're hopeful by this time we can run the proposed schedule. So when we have more clarity, it's going to be a while, but this is a ways off. So we're hopeful.
Okay. Senator Machicki?
Yeah, I don't Mr. Carpenter, I don't know if you were looking at, there was an amendment that passed to change the 50 miles between ports to 20 miles between ports. Do you know what the status of that amendment is? Is that a realistic threat, or where do you think that sits? I know it passed the Senate. I was worried about it passing the House. It looks like you have a lifeline that might be approaching the bench.
I did read that, but I'm not familiar with where that would be. Go ahead, Mr. Mills.
For the record, Andy Mills, Ledge Liaison, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Through the chair, Senator Machicki, the 20-mile I had heard about, I think it's only one body, but I know that we also had heard that some other areas considered themselves to be eligible, but we found that eligibility criteria was not being met because it was from one rural port to a park. We didn't feel that met the criteria involved. And so I think working with FTA, who I believe is the federal partner in this case, we would be pushing back that the language is specific and trying to work with them on that criteria. But that's the status that we know right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Off of Mr. Machicki, Senator Machicki's question. It's okay. He couldn't remember who I was yesterday on the floor, so it's fair. So. are you aware of any other states that are trying for this money, you know, as far as any other port systems looking into it? Are we the only ones? Do we have competition for it?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, there was a question early on about, was it Rhode Island? Yeah, ferry. And we wondered about that, but then I believe that there was a $12.5 million add-on that was essentially, we took that as an acknowledgement that was, and it was over and above the 200, that was an acknowledgement that they did not consider themselves to be a part of that. Cool. But again, that's a one more piece we're trying to figure out if that was the interpretation or not. So things are very fluid.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no further questions, please proceed.
For the record again, Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, DOT. And just to add on to that, we're waiting for the notice of funding opportunity, which will hopefully provide us some clarity here soon. I believe that's in April, May, correct? Yeah, okay. Next slide, slide three. This is kind of a look back to FY19 of our budget and our plan versus actual expenditures and et cetera, to give you an idea where we've been and where we intend to go. You can see there's multiple lines here. I can walk through each one real quick, but the general idea is we had planned weeks of service versus actual weeks of service. We had planned port calls. I thought we had actual port calls on here, but I don't see that. We had budgeted revenue versus actual revenue, and then our fare box recovery to give you an idea. So if you look at the far right, the governor's proposal is 362.7 weeks of service, which is similar to the FY19 final authorized plan. So we're feeling we're returning to a time, well, to better times, I guess, for service provided anyway. And our port calls are 6,300 in the governor's budget compared to 5,900 in FY19. The revenue collections, we're expecting around $53 million again. This is, we have another slide here you'll see that shows where we've come out of in the last couple of years with COVID, the challenges there. And you can see below our actual revenues collected. So, for example, for FY20 and 21, we had budgeted revenue of $48 million and $51 million, respectively, and collected $28 million and $27 million. So, roughly, I mean, ballparking roughly half. I think the total loss, what we were calling unrealized revenue, was around $46 million, which we were thankfully reimbursed by the federal government on that in one of the CRISA or CARES Act, I believe it was. So down below, to Senator Schauer's question, you can see the makeup of the budget in previous years. The governor's proposal for 23 is 135 of federal. In prior years, you can see that we have it broken out in unrestricted general funds, designated general funds, and some other fund sources. But you can see that our UGF unrestricted general funds portion was $63 million in 22 and $54.46 on back, you can see. And then our designated general funds, basically made up of our revenues of the system, have averaged around $50-something million. the last thing I might point out is down below, the last two lines were showing the change of $23 million over last year's proposal. If you take out the forward funding, if you recall, the legislature had was able to provide a bridge funding to get us to a calendar year budget, and that gave us that forward funding to where we were able to put out a schedule a year in advance, which has been a very nice thing for the system.
Senator Schauer?
Senator, check his hand up. Two questions, well, a comment and a question. The this Senator Keel mentioned, you know, the lack of being able to get people, which is obviously a problem. The second one, this doesn't solve with the money, it's just it's an issue. But on the record from the conversation with the Marine Highway pilots and the others from a couple days last week, I guess it was, we still have a percentage of empty. For example, one of the problems we're running, because we're running boats because there's a schedule, and we're keeping that schedule, and sometimes the boats are running empty. So that's just, you know, one of multiple problems. This doesn't solve that. Is this going to show a decrement to the budget? So in other words, will this be something that's going to come out where it will seem like we're reducing the budget because we're actually just using federal money? And when I relate that question is, what are, I mean, I know you said the governor's proposing to do that. Is this going to come out as just, well, we're just saving money for 5 years, but not really because the feds are paying for it? Or are we going to do something in that proposal to capture that, all of that, or just a portion of it for later, for the future? In other words, almost like putting the money, you know, away in the permanent fund or something. Is it, how's that going to be included? You know, for what's shown, the shell game with the money.
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Schauer, for the immediate budget, I would say there's, at least in the Department of Transportation, you'll see a reduction of general funds, obviously, because we're basically adding a bunch of federal money to replace that general fund. I don't know about on the overall statewide budget level, but certainly for our agency, And then to your further point, I mean, there's a lot of policy, I think, that needs to be established as far as where, how money is, you know, this $200 million annual windfall, if you will, how we best utilize it. I mean, we put forward a proposal to basically fully fund the operating budget and save that state money, in theory, banking the revenue into the Marine Highway Fund for future use. That money, if it was to say, if we were to fund the operating budget over 5 years with the federal money, hopefully that money, the revenues could collect annually and accumulate to a point where if the federal money dried up, we would then have some substantial, I don't know if it's an endowment, but a savings account of revenue to utilize for some plan. So I don't know if that answers your question or not. I hope so.
It does, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm just hoping that, you know, hope's not a great plan, but that we would be using this wisely and saving it if we had the option or anything that would allow us to operate into the future, you know, turned into concrete and steel while we can. So thanks.
Senator Machicki.
Yeah, my question was similar, but it was really how does the department propose preserving that UGF? How many, so with 5 years of funding at this level, how far does it get the Marine Highway Service in the future without an additional appropriation if that money was? So I could certainly support it going into the Marine Highway Fund if I knew that 5 years of funding resulted in, you know, 7 years of operation or 8 years of operation without an additional appropriation. That would be significant to me. Have you plotted forward? And just a second part of that question, do you foresee any adjustments to the fee schedule for services that might encourage ridership and cargo usage on the Marine Highway Service that might, when the money does dry up, are those folks going to be acclimated to additional use of the service that might result in a lot higher ridership levels and fare box recovery post that 5 year length of time?
Yeah, excellent questions. Senator Machicki, through the chair, I don't mean to punt, but this new board is, we're meeting almost biweekly right now, and there's a lot of concern, obviously, on the fleet makeup, the old vessels, and we're looking at, you know, capital revitalization, how that would occur, what's needed, and what it would cost, and, you know, this $200 million played directly into that, and how it's invested, how the revenues are saved or not. I think that's the discussion going on right now, and how it comes out, I'm not sure. I'm hopeful that we will invest in new ships over time to where we can modernize a fleet to have a more reliable fleet. I think is our, we keep saying we're staying the course towards reliability. I think is our primary mission here is to provide that service reliably. And so I think there's a lot to be determined. And we're open to input from everyone to how to best proceed forward. One of our steps is obviously creating this new fund separate from the general fund to make sure that the receipts of the system don't get swept, if you will. So that's a key piece of this windfall, I would say. And to your point on fares, that's always a challenge to find that sweet spot between I would say at one moment I'm being told to generate as much revenue. You know, I would have said last year at this time the goal was to increase our fare box recovery to more of a 50%, 50% fare box, 50% state money. That tends to not go so well with the public because it requires us to raise fees and tariffs. Right now I think our goal is to provide some minimum, not necessarily minimum, but some essential level of service to all the communities that really need it and go from there. And what that sweet spot of the fare box is always difficult and being reviewed all the time.
All right. Thank you. Senator Sharp.
Thank you. So as Senator Machicki asked, you know, that ridership has been dropping. We know that, you know, over time, based on different modes of transportation, certain levels kind of stayed relatively consistent. But if we are moving ships at that port rate, 6,311 calls, and the ridership is down, that speaks not only to cost of operating them, especially if we know the percentage of empty is fairly high on certain routes and times, but it's also usage of the boats, right? When we would rather not utilize them if we don't have to, because that lets them last longer, more time between maintenance. So what is the plan if we look at this expected rate and go, yeah, not really working. Maybe we need to reduce that. Is the board open to that? Are you guys discussing how that's going to play out based on, like he said, the, you know, ridership numbers? And is, in other words, is there flexibility in this to for the board to do this? Are you discussing that? Because that all of this plays in. I mean, I'd hate to see us running at 6,300 if there's only really use for 4,000. How do you plan to handle that?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Schauer. Good question. And, you know, what's interesting is our car deck is pretty consistent. It's only declined a moderate, well, I don't know exact rate, but not compared to the passenger level. And so even though our passengers are down quite a bit, we're being consistent on the car deck, which is the big source of the marine highway, so kind of extending that highway system. And one of the challenges of, you know, it makes a little bit of sense of tying ships up when they're not at full capacity or at some optimal level of capacity, but it's quite challenging with crewing, again, because we need to provide a year-round job for these, year-round career, and sometimes we have to run, I would almost say, we're providing a service, and it's not always fully utilized, basically, but there's challenges on how we manage that.
Thank you. All right. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I think there might be a kind of a reverse opportunity here on getting Alaskans and tour companies and things like that back in love with the Alaska Marine Highway System. Now that you have this cushion of some federal funding, it'd be nice to revitalize that ridership. So there may be creative ways to do that. That's the reverse of trying to squeeze every penny out of every rider and every vehicle. I'm going to leave that up to you all on the board, but I'm interested in those developments as they occur. You might feed the transportation departments kind of the minutes of the meetings and things like that, so we understand where they're going, because I think this is a kind of once-in-a-lifetime opportunity here to try to get usage reignited within the state, maybe some contracts with some of the tour companies and some of the cruise ship companies that don't take the additional legs that might result in some out-of-the-box thinking that could really have a long-term benefit.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, great point. And internally, a couple things to what you had mentioned there is, there's been a lot of criticism about our dynamic pricing, which is, you know, where as the capacity fills, gets more expensive, kind of like an airline. So we've tried to do maybe reverse of that, and we ran some specials last year on some low run routes that we thought we could generate additional interest. And, you know, we had mixed results, but that's certainly something we're looking at. Our marketing folks are always looking for opportunities. They're going to trade shows, pumping up the system. We're really trying to create I've been calling it AMHS buzz, to get a buzz back in the system, just like you were mentioning, that we're back. And this is an opportunity to reinvigorate the fleet, make it younger and for the next generation or two or three. And so we're with you, and hopefully we can do that. And all ideas are welcome. And we will definitely get you the minutes from all our AMHOB meetings.
Thank you. All right. Please proceed.
All right. Thank you. So this is just a quick graphical kind of picture of the last slide. We call it the Big Dipper, as you can probably guess why. So there's two bars, or the bars represent our revenue collected, and the top line is the weeks of service that were provided with that revenue. And it's, I guess, this is actual weeks of service that were provided. And again, I think the key takeaway is the 362 weeks we're looking at, and the 23 proposal is similar to the actuals that were provided in 14 and 15. And, you know, you can see the giant drop in revenue that occurred over the last few years as a result of the pandemic.
All right.
Okay, now I wanted to just switch over to, I guess, the maintenance topic. This is a slide depicting our annual state-funded overhauls. This is in the capital budget every year. It ranges from $15 to $20 million, roughly. This is all the necessary funding to maintain our vessels that we can. There are certain requirements we can't use federal money for. You know, routine maintenance is one of them. Same thing on our roads, our highways. Same thing with the vessels. So there's anything the feds would consider routine maintenance we would need state funding for. So we get an annual appropriation. This is what we do our annual COIs, or certificate of inspection, which is a Coast Guard and American Bureau of Shipping requirement to get that annual certification. It basically is a stamp of approval that these vessels are safe to run and they have the required maintenance to do so. And we've broken it out by vessel here over the years. This kind of leads into our 23 request, which is $20 million in the capital budget. And that's, you can see it varies every year based on direct need, but $20 million is certainly the range we're in these days with the aging vessels.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So these are general fund numbers for the state paid work. But there's also general fund match and the federal overhauls, and that's a really big piece of keeping the vessels running. What does this chart look like if we include the federal overhauls too?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Keel, good question. And we had a slide to show our, I think it was the last 10 years federal, but we were struggling to get the numbers precise, so we decided to leave it out. But it was basically saying we get a 15 to 17 million from a formula called the ferry boat discretionary out of the federal highway program, and then we whatever else we program in the national highway system pot. It ranges from, I don't know, the total over the 10 years was like $250 million, and again, that number we couldn't dial in quite right, so we didn't include it. But the idea is those are more major CIP projects to the vessels versus the routine maintenance projects. But you're right, there's a significant and additional investment in the vessels to keep them running.
Follow-up, Senator Keel.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I guess as we look at the notion of a corporation in the context of the bill, it's probably a good idea to get a sense of the total price tag. and of course, as we talk about integration of a corporation with the rest of DOT, integrating those overhauls in the STIP planning process, whether that's ferry boat funds or NHS funds or whatever other fund source we use, that would be pretty key. Mr. Carpenter, I laid the total line at the bottom of this chart alongside the OMB backup history on state-funded overhauls, and we're a couple few million dollars different in a few years. Higher on this chart, I think, in all cases. Did we make that up out of the operating account, or where were those? What was the source of that extra cash?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Keel, these are actuals versus, I know those OMB backup sheets often provide the appropriation levels, and I would I'm not sure if they would include any supplementals. In many of the years here, we'd get like $15 million. And we'd come in at 18, and so we'd have to come in for a supplemental request. And that's kind of another reason we're asking for 20 this year, is to avoid those supplementals. But when the money was tighter, we'd get pinched on the pinched. These would be reduced, yeah. I'm not sure that answered your question, but it's not out of the operating budget, I can tell you that. It's mostly coming out of supplementals.
Thank you. Please continue.
Okay. Okay, this is just kind of a neat little picture to show you how old the vessels are, I guess. Even a line in our vessel introduction with the presidents in place at the time. You can see the JFK, Nixon, and Clinton, and Trump.
Senator Schauer?
Just a question out of curiosity. I think I asked this a couple years ago, but I've conveniently forgotten this little fact. Where are all of them made, by and large?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, that's a great question. Most of them are, they're federal projects, so they go to a competitive bid. So they'd be, I don't actually know, we could probably get a detail right down in the big shipyards in the lower 48. The two latest were fully state funded, and they were constructed in that bigger shipyard in Ketchikan. So
I remember that. That's why I was asking, Mr. Chair, so that's kind of interesting, what the state workload to get other projects and things we're looking at. And, sorry, yeah, too far away from the microphone. Sorry, Nancy. I asked that question because as we talk about the there was a point to it, is that as we're looking at maybe smaller boats and other types of things with the board and how we might make the system more efficient, useful, you know, different ideas, that maybe that's one of the things we could look at where we might have options to, you know, if we don't need big grand ships, you know, for lots of those and smaller ones, maybe it's things we can do in-state as options with the money and how you might play this out if the federal government was going to help us do that. There might be some things here if we're willing to think a little bit outside the box, which is, I guess, where I'm going with that. I hope we do that. Thanks.
All right. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deputy Commissioner, I appreciate this is a slide showing what we have now. I wouldn't want to get the impression that this is all the investment in the system. Would it be too great an imposition to add the Taku, the Fairweather, and the Chiniga, other vessels that we have ran for many, many years but don't own right now?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, we can certainly add those to the picture. That would be an interesting addition. Yeah, this was just to show what we have at the moment.
Yeah, thank you.
Just somewhat along those lines, could you remind me again, I know we're planning for the Tuscany replacement. When's that supposed to come online again? Oh, there we go.
This one right here.
Getting ahead of you. Sorry.
No, that was a great question, Mr. Chair. Led me right here. So, yeah, we are, as you all probably know, the preliminary design is complete, and we're working on the construction, well, it's called CMGC, contract RFP. So it's the Construction Management General Contractor. And if you're familiar, as you guys, you passed all that legislation last year, probably nothing you don't already know, but the idea is the contractor is intimately involved in the final design to avoid a lot of mistakes that occur during construction, right? So so we're getting ready to go for the RFP on that here, hopefully very soon, definitely this month. I don't know what all these bullets mean, but once that happens, it'll go to construction, I believe, this fall, or I'm sorry, it'll begin the process towards construction. And when it will be online, I believe, is I might have to defer to Matt McLaren, but I think it was projected at 2025. Maybe I can defer that for a better answer.
All right. Mr. McLaren, if you can hear us, if you wouldn't mind answering.
Sure. For the record, Matt McLaren, business manager, Last Marine Highway System. I missed the part of the question. I was breaking up a little bit. Can you repeat it?
Yeah, we're just wondering. We're talking about the Tuscany replacement, and we're wondering when that is slated to go into operation.
Let me look. I'm trying to pull up my other sheet here. As we have it projected right now, we're projecting to be close to complete the CMGC and work with the contractor, get that set up, finish the bid process, design process. So if we can get that done by 2023, then we're looking at about a 4-year time for that vessel. So if we could begin that by 2023, we'd be looking at toward 2027 to have completion on that vessel.
Okay, thank you. All right.
It's, Mr. Chair, it's a little scary. Tuscany is pretty old. I hope we can get there. You know what I mean? Yeah. That was all the slides we had. We did want to put up these other topics that were on the list for questions, I guess. I know the big one was the the STIP and federal funding and how that would play into the corporation. And I can just comment on that if you'd like.
Yes, please.
Yeah, before I got here, I met with one of the folks at our planning division, and they pulled up Title 23 something. I can't remember the exact citation, but there was assurance that the corporation, as being a primarily publicly owned corporation, a publicly owned entity, would be completely eligible for STIP funding and anything to do with it. So that was nice to hear. And plus, there's the added benefit of being on the national highway system, so it'd be eligible for NHS money.
All right. And it's my understanding that we have to get, in order for that to happen, finally, that would require some sort of a sign-off from the Federal Transit Administration. I'm wondering what kind of action would need to be taken in order to get that. Is that just a regulatory process? Would we have to do something at the state level? Would that require congressional action? What all is involved there to designate that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure entirely how to answer that. I guess I was speaking to our actual federal highway program funding, the FTA funding. I don't believe the ferry boat discretionary is FTA. We do get some FTA money, and maybe Matt could speak to that.
Okay. Mr. McLaren, if you could speak to how the FTA plays into the marine highway funding in terms of what we receive from the federal government.
Sure. Again, Matt McLaren, business manager, Marine Highway System. Mr. Chair, the FTA money we get, a little bit of ferryboat formula money each year, FHWA, and we do get some FTA money. We can certainly put together the history on that if you want to see the amounts that we've received each year on FTA funding.
Thank you, Mr. McLaren. I think what we're looking at is less a question of amounts and more a question of making sure that we check all the boxes we need to for the new corporation to still be eligible, and trying to figure out how much of that is state action, how much of that's federal, whether we're talking about acts of the legislature, just acts within regulatory acts at the federal level, whether that require an act of Congress to name it specifically, whatever type of action would be necessary there.
Okay, yeah, Mr. Chair, I think as far as the history on the FTA, I believe Captain Falvey's on as well. He could probably answer the federal requirement question better than I can at this time.
All right. Captain Falvey, if you can hear us, if you wouldn't mind placing yourself on the record and addressing the question.
Yeah, for the record, Captain John Falvey, General Manager, Oscar Mayne Highway System, through the chair. This is about Federal Highways formula funding. Is that the question that you're asking?
Well, we're talking about being designated under the Federal Transit Administration, making sure that the new corporation would still be have that designation so they could still get FTA funding, and what kind of steps would be required to make sure that the new corporation is eligible under the FTA?
Well, the discussions, this can probably the discussions that I've had with the Department of Law have been very preliminary, but upon a first blush with our attorney, we feel that that we can make that jump. That once corporation happens, that we would have access to the same funding that that the Marine Highway does right now with FTA and Federal Highways.
Okay, Mr. Carpenter.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. We're in contact with the regional administrator for the FTA right now, just discussing this $200 million rural ferry program. So we'll actually ask that question, what steps would be necessary to make this transition.
Okay.
Be a good question to find out.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate it. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eligibility, critical first step, not the end of the walk. When I look at have looked in the past at the difference between projects nominated for various flavors of federal STIP funding and the amount we get, it looks a lot like the difference between the amount we all get asked for in capital budget requests out of our communities and the amount of general fund we end up appropriating the capital budget. There's quite the disconnect. So there's a whole lot more eligible for federal transportation money than there is federal transportation money. How would we incorporate, how would we ensure that a corporation is in those discussions in a meaningful way with the planning staff at DOT who actually write the STIP?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kill, it's a really good question. One I'm concerned about. You know, there are some benefits to having Marine Highway within DOT. I mean, it gives us that intermodal overall sense of the transportation system and that we're, you know, planning for. That's not to say if there was a separate corporation, that would still not occur. Right now we're recruiting, and I think we're actually in final interviews for a dedicated Marine Highway planner, which we haven't had for years. That planner is going to work with the new board and you know, step up the planning for Marine Highway. But I was talking about it earlier, that we could, if there was a public corporation, that this planner could still reside within our planning division at DOT, and they could still work together. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility. The challenge is still always, even for the Marine Highway now, is to compete for the limited dollar, as you mentioned. There's so many transportation needs all over the state that we can't just build ferries because we want to build ferries. Like, there's road work all over the state that needs to happen. So it's a challenge to plan for, if you will.
Okay, thank you. So I've got one other question for you here. So one document we received from DOT, it was a history of the Alaska Marine Highway System unrestricted revenue by vessel. And there was a line at the bottom of that that said non-vessel revenue. And the a couple of things struck out at me. One, I'm curious what non-vessel revenue is. The other one was I was looking at the different numbers through the years, and they bounced around a fair amount. But the FY21 number went up to 200 after the last few years had been bouncing around in the 20s, 30s, 40s. And I was curious, and my apologies if that did not get distributed to the committee. So I'm on this one here. I'm
trying to get the right one.
There we go.
10 to 21.
Yep, that one. Yep. My apologies if that didn't get distributed. If anybody's missing it, we can provide it later. But I'm curious, first of all, what was the what all counts as non-vessel revenue, and second of all, why we're getting such a big jump in FY21 over FY20?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, this is directly from our annual report, correct? Yeah, so page 16. If I could defer to Matt McLaren, our finance guy at the Marine mm-hmm. Highway, he would probably know the answer to that.
All right. Mr. McLaren?
Yeah, Matt McLaren again, business manager. I'm having a bad connection today. Can you repeat the question?
So there's in your annual report, I believe it was on page 16, There's a page that's titled Operating Revenues by Vessel that I was taking a look at, and it gave a category of non-vessel revenue, and I had a couple of questions about that. The first was what all was included in that? Where is that money coming from? Is this rentals? Is this concessions being sold on board the ships? You know, what exactly qualifies as that? And second, I was looking at the big jump between the FY18-19-20 range and the FY21 range, and I was wondering why we're expecting such a large jump there.
So jump big in 15.
Sure, Mr. Chair. The non-vessel revenue does not include food and those kinds of things. We put those with the vessels themselves, but the non-vessel revenue includes things. There are concession revenues, facility rentals, some other items like that. We do throw there, if we've got some things we get reimbursed for that we put into our Marine Highway Fund, we put there as well. That's not necessarily tied to an individual vessel, but we can certainly get you the breakdown of those amounts each year and why that jumped up in FY21.
Okay, I appreciate that. You mentioned facilities rentals. Could you just give me one or two examples of recently what you've rented out and what it was used for?
Sure, Mr. Chair. We've got I don't have all the details. It's just I can find out what exactly those are. They're just some items that we get a little bit of income off of, not anything significant, but we can certainly, I can pull all the details on that and get that to you also.
Okay, thank you. All right. Seeing no further questions at the moment, appreciate it. All right, Mr. Carpenter, Mr. Wills, thank you for joining us today. Seeing no further questions on this at the moment, I would like to bring up Mr. Ryan Williams from Department of Revenue. We did want to talk a little bit about, there were some questions came up a few weeks ago about the bonding authority that were given to the corporation, and I was hoping Mr. Williams would be able to address a few of those. So if you could place yourself on the record, we are going to, we're looking at quite a large bonding authority in here, and if we've talked a little bit in here about the comparisons between what we've got a bonding authority in this bill versus bonding authority in a couple of other corporations. I don't know if you've got anything prepared to speak on that, but a little bit. Okay. Just kind of give us an introduction real quick, and then I'm sure we'll have some questions.
Okay. Ryan Williams, operations analyst for the Department of Revenue. I work in the debt management section with the debt manager.
Oh, thank you.
And Devin Mitchell and myself have done an initial review, and just looking at this public corporation compared to other state corporations and agencies, the proposed corporation to issue debt, it's a lot more flexible in a manner and with less oversight than other public corporations. And then just to go off that point, similar limitations you would see, for example, ADA has a limitation to issue bonds if over $25 million in a fiscal year. Also, University of Alaska has certain restrictions if debt service annually is over $2.5 million on a single issuance. It's just so placing bookends on limitations to issue debt would be advisable just from a strategy credit perspective.
Understood. It's my understanding that there's already going to be some limitations imposed, just because if you go out to the bond market, they're going to have some requirements as to what they want to see in terms of documentation and making sure we've got ability to pay and things like that. Could you address those a little bit, just kind of give us an overview?
Sure. Through the chair. The corporation is allowed to issue bonds according to the SB 170 proposed that would be secured by pretty much revenues for any purpose: federal, municipal, corporate, association, institutional, individual, person, which it's broad. It's a very broad spectrum of those revenues, and would be similar to the Alaska Railroad in terms of pledges. And any debt issue would be secured by revenues generated from those bond proceeds or the assets of that agency issuing the bonds.
I'm curious about it. So if you go out to the bond market and you know, let's say they wanted to issue $20 million in bonds, just a real quick overview of what they're wanting to see from the proposed corporation in terms of the paperwork and stuff for underwriting to make sure that they're solvent, and how that compares to the requirements that we would impose on it statutorily, and just kind of where those two mesh.
Okay. Through the chair, first I'll start with the authority requirement, the legislature would authorize the issuance of bonds through that corporation, and then specifically on an issuance by the corporation, there would be a disclosure document. And so it's hard to give you an example not knowing exactly what source of revenue would be pledged in an issuance. But for instance, if there was a revenue bond issuance, there would be a detailed description and a history of those revenues flowing into the corporation. Also, in general, on revenue pledges, you have to show that there's also a debt service coverage requirement. So if you have a historical look back, you would probably want your net revenues to be about 1.25 times the amount of outstanding debt service payments by the corporation.
Okay, thank you. Senator Schauer, you had a question?
Thank you. Actually, that was a great segue, because my question kind of was going to be, we have a new corporation, assuming that this was to happen, and the issuance of that bond, the credit rating for them, if they would have that, or how they would look at it, and you get into this new corporation, are they going to look at what they did in the past? Are they going to consider it new? And then how are they going to treat that? Because we're kind of creating a new entity. So is this something that the market, the issuers would look at and say, well, this is a new thing, so we're going to have to demonstrate history, but we don't have it? Is that going to make it hard for us to start out? How does that work? Because we're essentially standing up something that's new, even though it isn't really. So how will they look at that? How's the market going to treat that?
Through the chair to Senator Schauer, there would be definitely need to be a detailed write-up on the creation and prospective future revenue generating capabilities that the use of bonds would allow. So for instance, an independent consultant report showing a pro forma projection on what revenues could be generated if bonds were issued would have some detail in it. And so they would also have to look at historical appropriations and unrestricted general funds to the corporation. And so although it is a public, or it would be a public corporation of the state, you would have to show information about the state in the disclosure document in terms of prior or a historical look back on transfers to the corporation.
And the Mr. Chairman, sure. One very brief follow-up. Would we expect then that the interest rates would potentially be higher with a lower rating initially until, because it's new without that history, or we're essentially projecting it? Or do you think there's any possibility they would look at and go, no, this is state run and it's something that's really just a continuance, you know, from the past? So would they even allow that, or would we expect a tougher market before, you know, as far as the what we would have to set up before it had that history? If you can't answer, I understand. It's I know you're guessing, but that's why I'm kind of asking, because we're into new territory creating it. So I'm just curious if it's going to be tougher for us as opposed to something that was already established. So.
If it's all right, I would like to get back to the committee on how that would be structured.
Understood. Thank you, sir. Senator Kiel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Williams, I'd like to get a little less specific. So you mentioned that it's probably a good idea to have some sort of bookend or sideboard on the ability to issue debt, and maybe you could just talk in a little more general sense about good ways, better ways and worse ways to do that. I think back to the 08-09 crash, right, and there were around the country, there were parking authorities and development authorities who had sort of their own ability to go bond. And when the economy took a dip, they were going bankrupt and defaulting all over the country. And nobody had ever looked over their shoulder. On the other hand, if every time you want to borrow a nickel, you have to come to the legislature and get a bill passed, it's a real pain in the nuisance. So With that spectrum, can you talk to us just a little bit about what you see in the world of municipal debt or corporate public corporation debt? What are better ways and worse ways to put those kind of sideboards on, understanding that there's a whole lot of distance in there?
Through the chair to Senator Keel, one of the most common broad forms of limitation would be an issuance cap. I think from my perspective, I also work with the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. And so there's a total issuance cap of $1.7925 billion with certain subsegments inside of that cap or other caps, such as regional health organizations who also have a cap. And so just having an overall cap would produce a ceiling, so you know that you couldn't go above there, and that ceiling would obviously have some connotation of the underlying corporation's revenues or operations and be structured in that format. Other limitations can include who can partner with the corporation. I'm going to have to go back to the Alaska Bond Bank Authority just as an example. We partner with political subdivisions, which would be most commonly communities across the state, but that legislation has been expanded to include the University of Alaska, regional health organizations, joint action agencies, and joint insurance corporations. So it's well defined who can participate in the program. And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Machicki?
Yeah, so far and I'm relying on the sheet, but it looks like the Alaska Housing is the only public corporation that doesn't need legislative approval for bonding. Has AHFC bonded in the past?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. Yes, they have. They have issued veterans mortgage program bonds through that authorization. I believe in 2019, I can double check the most recent issuance of those. But they also issue capital project bonds. And if it's okay, I can come back to the committee with a full rundown on recent issuances by AHFC and.
That would be helpful, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple other quick questions.
Yeah, please.
Have we bonded for marine highway capital projects in the past, the state?
No. Not to my knowledge, but.
Mr. Carpenter, did you want to address that one? Oh, okay. All right. All right. Senator Keel?
Mr. Chairman, did we not do grant anticipation revenue vehicles for one of the fast vehicle ferries? I thought we did Garvey's for the Chinooka.
Yeah, if you want to approach the table, Mr. Scarpner, please.
Rob Carpenter, DOT. Great question, Senator Keel. Through the chair, your memory is probably better than mine. I know we did some Garveys, and I'm not sure if one of the vessels was on there. I don't know if Captain Falvey's still online. He might actually remember that.
Captain Falvey, you still with us?
Yeah, Captain Falvey. No, I don't have a. I was here right at the beginning when the fast ferries were being built, but I don't recall if they were bonded. But we'll have to look into that if we can.
Okay, thank you. And then, Senator Machicki, do you have another question?
Yeah. So you talked about we're kind of leaving this wide open in this, which I'm uncomfortable with, on the independent issuance, particularly of a new corporation. I might eventually be able to get there, but that's why I asked the question whether we had bonded, and perhaps we did in one occurrence or not. But you, when you talk about independently with limits, only Alaska Aerospace and ADA is able to capable of doing that. I'd love some information on what their limits look like. If it's a proportion of kind of an annual budget or some other basis, where the limit lies and maybe the logic behind that limit. Unless you know that answer, which I would assume you don't, that would be, I'd like to understand that.
Okay. Going forward. Yeah.
Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, my memory is intensely fallible, but I think the Student Loan Corporation also has authority to do bonds for its primary purpose without coming to the legislature. I think it's been a while since they've been able to do that, but can we look into that? We'll just bring that one back to. Thanks.
Understood. Yep. Okay. And Senator Machicki?
Yeah, thank you. Perhaps we can provide this sheet to Ryan and have him update it with other organizations we may have missed and kind of scrub this a little bit. Not that it's not accurate, but just in case we're missing some things. And what would be nice is a column that says utilizes history of utilization or bonding utilization, just so we understand kind of what that looks like.
Understood. Yeah, when we when my office put this sheet together, it was recognizing that we've got, what, 15, 17 corporations, something like that, under the state, that, you know, we don't want to overwhelm people with what we didn't want to overwhelm people with information. So we put together the ones that we thought were most applicable. So, but definitely we can expand that out. So, alrighty. Any other questions at the moment? All right. We've got giving you a lot to chew on, Mr. Williams. I understand that this is kind of open ended, so we understand you getting back to us. We appreciate your time, sir. Yeah, most definitely. All righty. Any other questions among the committee today? All right. Pretty good. All right. Thank you. Seeing no other questions at the moment, we'll go ahead and wrap it up for today. So that's going to conclude our business for today. So first off, amendments for SB 170 are going to be due Wednesday, March 30th to my office by noon. Our next meeting currently is Thursday, March 24th, where we'll be discussing service and routes for SB 170. And then we're going to be hearing an introduction on SB 231, the Alaska Railroad Corporation and the Executive Budget Act. So with that, thank you all for attending today, and we're going to be adjourned at 2:44 p.m. Thank you.